Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a big show, a real big shoe.
You believe in miracles?
Yes! You're listening to the Penn Nation Radio Show with hosts Ken Will, Joe Depto, Ashley Langlois, Andy Hughes, and Nick Richter. Guests can call into the show at 347-202-0344, or you can tweet us at the Penn Nation.
I don't know why I try anymore, because I turn on the NHL Network expecting to see something new, and I've literally been watching World Junior Championship highlights for the last week. I just saw USA take a 4-0 lead again. I'm wondering if Canada's going to actually make a rally this time or not.
Awkward silence.
Yeah, maybe they can. But I mean, you would think that the NHL would be capitalizing on this time with the NHL Network, because, you know, this is the iron's hot for their and coming out of the lockout, there just appears to be absolutely no contingency plan for or strategy for public relations.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like they felt maybe that the season wasn't going to happen, and then all of a sudden it did, and it kind of looks like it caught them on their heels a bit. But I would love to see some more Steve Mears.
which is apparently going to happen.
Yeah.
Starting next week on Monday. There's been no original programming on NHL Network up until now, but at least it looks like 5 o'clock, I think, on weekday afternoons, he's going to have a show on there. I don't know if it's going to be the same type of thing that EJ Hradek was doing last year or not, but it could be getting some new content back. But I mean, this whole week would have been a great time to be doing it. It just seems like there's just a lot of problems with the NHL and marketing, and they keep telling us, "Oh, we're going to reveal those things later. We're going to talk about those things later." You know, like I said, the iron is hot, and there's no time that more appropriate than right now to do it. This isn't a great time for apologies, though. And as we've been recapping all week, the Penguins seem to be the first team and ownership group to come out and make an apology. Yesterday, the Carolina Hurricanes did. Today, the people who needed to apologize finally came through. Jeremy Jacobs and Gary Bettman both issuing apologies to the fans and to everybody involved with hockey for the lockout, you know, and saying that, you know, man, this hurts us just as much as it hurt me.
It's like when your parents spank you when you're a kid. This is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. Bull crap.
Which is what you meant to say.
Yeah. Absolute bull crap.
That's exactly what came out of my mouth, but that's exactly what I meant to say. Gary Bettman also saying that, when the time is appropriate, we're going to talk about what we're going to do for our fans. So, fans, you just sit and wait a little bit longer, and we'll tell you when it's okay to, you know, come to the NHL for your needs.
I wonder what kind of fans are expecting. You know, it's like, oh, you know, you better do something great. You better buy me a diamond ring. You know, something crazy, you know. I don't think people go as crazy as saying Pens should be doing exactly what the Tampa Bay Lightning are doing, which is giving away season tickets for $200. I mean,
Good luck.
Yeah.
You're talking about 24 home games, $200 for that. That's a great deal for what's going on. Like I mentioned today, there are a lot of seats and a lot of really just about everything at Consol Energy Center, where you're lucky to be able to find tickets for a single game.
That's about 5 times more than Blue Jacket season tickets.
That's about like $8.30 per game.
Look at that math.
Jeez.
Do you have a calculator, or do you just do that in your head?
I'm a ninja.
Not that anymore. But lots and lots and lots to talk about today on the show. Of course, Brian Burke getting the axe in Toronto. Who saw that coming?
Not many.
It's
the timing was just weird.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the biggest thing, because a lot of people could kind of see Brian Burke. No, he's not exactly the most people-friendly person on the planet. He's always good for a good soundbite, but, you know, maybe not the one that your public relations people are saying, yeah, let's put that on the webpage. but yeah, Brian Burke, maybe not a shock, but certainly the timing is surprising for a lot of people.
And the fact that he's staying there as a senior, what is it, senior advisor, whatever it is.
Let's see what that role really ends up being like, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happened to some other teams before, I think, in the past, too. Didn't that happen with Edmonton as well?
Mm-hmm. I had a lot of teams.
This disappears.
Who's still out of contract. With the Penguins, it was Michel Therrien. They kept him on as an advisor. He went away for a while, and then, like, a year later, he kind of resurfaced and was in more of a scouting role once they kind of figured out something to do with him. If Brian Burke can't find something immediately, maybe he does come back to Toronto Maple Leafs and serve out some time and have something to keep him busy and keep him involved in the game. Although I think there are lots of options for Brian Burke at this point in his career. I can't see him sitting in an office waiting for a phone call asking, no.
No.
Do you think that Luongo would be a fit here in Toronto? Roberto Luongo is the other big story going on right now.
Mm.
And we're going to cover a lot more of these in depth. One thing I do want to ask you guys to think about this, so I'll come back to a later show. And for those of you tonight, you guys, and weigh in on this as well, what's your dream broadcasters? I'm thinking about this when I was watching NHL Network, thinking about the programming, and also the fact that Rich had a director for Penguins games this year. John Zappala is going to be coming into this booth. He's the founder of Hockey Night in Canada on the CBC. So kind of a big deal right there. So hopefully there's some improvement in the broadcasts. I don't think there's personnel changes necessarily, just difference in directions and things like that. But if you had to start from scratch, if you were given the keys to the NBC in America, be your dream team, and you can give us a call. The number to call is 320-344. Again, that's 347-202-0344, or you can get at us at The Pens Nation. Tell us what your dream team is, and we'll come back to that. I'm going to go around the panel here, get your ideas too. Okay, Penguins defenseman. I put up a column earlier today, kind of breaking things down. The core is there, and going into camp, I think we all know that we're going to be dealing with Derek Englund, Brooks Orpik, Ben Lovejoy, Chris Letang, Matt Niskanen, and who am I missing on my list here? Oh, Paul Martin, that guy. So those six are definitely going to be with the Penguins in some way, shape, or form. Maybe one of them gets taken away from that. Maybe one of them gets waived or something aside from that. Now, I think one of those six has to sit in the seventh role. I think it's either going to be Derek Englund or Ben Lovejoy. Personally, my preference is Englund plays and Lovejoy sits for the majority of the time. And then you have the question, okay, of these minor league guys, who do you give a look at a camp? Who can you afford to give a look at a camp? Because, you know, you're, at some point, like if you have Bertuzzo, I'm going straight up, you're going to have to send one of them down probably. And they're going to have to clear waivers to go back to Wilkes-Barre Scranton. So who do those guys do you want to keep? I'm the players I have on my list, just because of the high-end blue-chip prospects, or most likely Canada this year, Robert Bertuzzo, Simone Dupre, Brian DeMuehlin, Joe Morrow, and Brian Street. So I want to hear from Joe Depto first. So these people, who would you like to keep or see at least get a look at camp?
I really like Robert Bertuzzo. I have for some time. I think he has a great shot. It's not the most accurate. You're not going to get power play quarterback type numbers out of the guy, but he does have a lot of nice puck movement. He's a strong passer, and what he can do physically in his own zone, he's a very big guy, and he's a very strong skater for being a big guy. There's a reason why he's been a mainstay in the AHL All-Star games for quite some time now. I think he's been one of the most underrated defensive prospects the Penguins have had, and had it not been for him getting a pretty substantial injury on a nasty hit from Zach Rinaldo last season, I think he probably would have stuck with Pittsburgh a lot more than he did. But, you know, injuries just happen and guys get sent down and called up for different reasons. And, you know, it just, there wasn't room on the roster for him, but I think he's a strong player. Brian Strait, I'm not a really big Brian Strait guy. It's not that I think he's a bad player. I just think he's kind of one of those career AHL guys, for lack of a better word. He's not bad in his own zone, but he just seems like the pace of the NHL game kind of eludes him more often than not. But to be honest, I do not, if I'm a Penguins fan and I'm looking at this defense thinking, what's the best possible scenario for me, I don't want any part of Ben Lovejoy. I'm sorry, the guy's just not good enough to play in the NHL. It's just the way it is. He's a good hockey player. That doesn't mean he's not a good hockey player. But there's a difference between being good and there's a difference between being NHL good. And Ben Lovejoy is the former, not the latter.
Do you think that sitting in that seventh role, do you think he's that type of good?
Well, the one advantage I would say of having him in the press box is that it doesn't seem to bother him. He seems to be okay with being the seventh guy and just playing in spot duty. Now, whether he really is or not, I don't know. I've never asked the guy. And if he's listening to this, he probably doesn't want to talk to me right now anyway. So, but it's, you know, I don't even know. But I would look into, if I'm Ray Shiro, I wouldn't even place a guy like that on waivers. Just see what you can get out of him. Even if it's a fifth or sixth round pick, at least it's something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And that's why, I mean, in my column, I mentioned that he is my seventh guy that I'd like to see there. I don't think having straight Tuzo up here necessarily is the best thing for the organization moving forward. Ben Lovejoy is, like you said, he's a good hockey player. He might not be totally in the moment for the NHL, but the thing is, that seventh defenseman is so important, especially now, because, I mean, you got defensemen playing 15, 25 minutes a game. There's going to be lots of wear and tear through the season. And like you've mentioned, there's always injuries involved, and the Penguins are no stranger to those over the past. So at a condensed schedule where defensemen play in the minutes that they do, that seventh role is going to be getting a lot more look. It's not quite as crucial and as important as the role that Tomas Vokoun would be playing this year as the backup goaltender, but it's certainly not something to be overlooked.
Yeah, and it's great to have some experience back there, too, during that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Robert Bourtou, though. I like his game a lot, and I think he's probably right now the most well-rounded out of the defensive corps down there in Wilkes-Barre, but there's something to be said for that kind of experience that Ben Lovejoy has right now. He's even got some playoff experience. Granted, it's not very positive playoff experience, but that's going to be pretty substantial, I think, for the Pens this season especially.
Mm-hmm. That balances out the Lovejoy opinion on the panel, I guess.
Yeah, you know, he's a great guy. The case.
That's my point on Lovejoy. Is like, if you ask anybody about him, it's like, but he's a really nice guy. It's like saying, like, you know, your friend goes to set you up with a girl, and it's like, yeah, she's got a great personality.
They say the same thing about Paul Martin right now, too.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a great guy. He makes me eggs.
Yeah, he's nice. He's friendly. He makes James Neal breakfast and folds his clothes for him.
That must have been part of Neil's contract.
Oh, if not, Paul Martin brings that to the team, which is the polar opposite of Ben Lovejoy, because people hate Paul Martin in Pittsburgh. But he's the Penguins' third-best defenseman on this team, or at least he's going to be playing in that role. And, I mean, Paul Martin, is he going to struggle the way he did last year, or do you guys expect to see improvement?
I expect a big improvement. I'll be honest. I think Paul Martin's going to have not just a good season, but a very good season. This guy was, had he not been injured in 2010, he was a lock to make Team USA. Are those people crazy? Ray Shiro passed on signing Sergei Gonchar to give this guy a $25 million 5-year deal. Is Ray Shiro a bad GM? I don't think so. I think the track record there speaks for itself. There's a reason he was brought in, and there's a reason why so many teams like this guy around the NHL. He had a bad season. Coaches have bad years. GMs have bad years. People have bad years. Sometimes that's the way it works. I think Paul Martin's a very good defenseman. He eats up a ton of minutes. If you look at some of his minutes logs and some of his strongest games, he skated almost a half an hour on some of those games. You can use him in any role because he's a good passer and he makes good decisions. He had a bad year. Lay off the guy. He's a good player.
Yeah, but he hasn't exactly felt comfortable, it looks like, in the Penn system at all. I mean, nothing against the guy. And you're right, he's a great player. He's an Olympian kind of caliber player, at least at one point a couple of years ago he was. But he just hasn't seemed to feel comfortable yet. And I think maybe this is that season that he gets it on track. And, he's had a long time to really think about the system, the structure of it, and all that stuff on the mental side of the game. Maybe this is the year he actually puts it all together.
Yeah, I think Paul Martin certainly will improve this season. Remember when he was signed along with Zdeněk Mihalik, people were calling the Penguins having one of the best defensive corps in the Eastern Conference. So obviously this guy, like you said, Joe, a lot of people were interested in Martin. There were times last year it seemed like he was kind of pushing it to skate, and we know his skating ability. He's just a really smooth skater, and there were times last year where, it didn't seem as smooth, and maybe he had some type of injury, but he seems to be at 100% now that he's had a lot of rest, and hopefully he'll be able to turn things around. I think he will, just like you guys said.
Yes, in preliminary quotes from Dan Biles, anyway, have tossed around the idea about him playing with Brooks Orpik. And in the past, that's proven to be a model to fit some of these defensemen who have been struggling within the system. Put Sergei Gonchar with Brooks Orpik, and he settled down. Put Chris Letang with Brooks Orpik, and then he settled down. Maybe that same thing will be in play for Paul Martin. The only question is, you don't have the same kind of defensive depth as the Penguins did back then when you had Rob Scuderi and Hal Gill and Mark Eaton back there on the Penguins blue line. But still, I think it could be something that's positive moving forward. Paige Lewis on Twitter says, I'm going to go on a limb here and say there's no way Martin can be as bad as he was last year. Mm-hmm. I still love him. Certainly true, I think.
No. It's kind of funny because it's eerily similar to like Scuderi. For so long, he was awful in the system, and then one great playoff run erased all of those memories from Penguins fans' minds. And now all you really remember of Rob Scuderi is that goal line save and just how pivotal he was in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. And that was just a flash in the pan for Scuderi either, because he's continued to have that kind of playing. Was it piece of the Los Angeles Kings playoff run back in last June? I had to remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Some other people weighing in on the defensive things. See, I said cashier number 91, Penn's Jets fan, says Bertuzzo and Strait, the other guys are too young to invite. Eric Majewski, if I have to just choose one, I keep Bertuzzo. By all accounts, he is the top D Wilkes-Barre all season. Spark Dog says Joe Morrow. Amber K. Ray and Bertuzzo are the only two that should get looks. And then you just keep whoever has the better camp. And then Eric Majewski came back also and says that Lovejoy is decent depth if you have room. If not, you still have Dylan Reese as a call-up away. We'll keep the other two D-men ahead of him. And Dylan Reese does have one thing. He has NHL experience. You don't worry about someone who's totally green on the whole thing come back. The only thing is, Dylan Reese, I think he's a little bit further back on the depth chart itself, but he does have experience.
You know what? Actually,
there's let you go. You're not that great of a defenseman. I'm sorry.
He had a pretty decent year down in Wilkes-Barre, though. He's been one of the more stable guys down there. But that's a great point.
He's a hometown thing, but win gold medals. For Penguins, the Penguins win the gold medal for the National Hockey League.
I guess we should just trade back for Ryan Malone while we're at it, just because he's a Pittsburgh guy. He must be great, right?
Well, Ryan, silver medals. him and Brooks Orpik.
Just start hoarding all the Pittsburgh kids.
I'd be all right with that.
Yeah.
I'd be all right with Brandon Saad.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
What type of pick these guys? Fleury or John Gibson?
DeMose Falcone.
Based on their World Junior performances alone, Fleury or John?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I mean.
Come on now.
Fleury had any kind of recollection of that time in his life. I hope not. I hope that's all repressed memories.
Let's hope so.
I sort of feel bad for Fleury at this point in the offseason, to be honest. I mean, the guy is just getting, like, you talk to people around the league. 2 years ago, Fleury was regarded as a top five goalie. And now you talk to him, everybody just remembers what he's done in the playoffs recently. I mean, he was brutal this year, there's no question. But the guy's still an elite goalie.
And only that, but they forgot about what he did in the 82 games leading up to the playoffs. Because he had an incredible season. And he just got to the fire.
Yeah, I mean, there were points where people were discussing Fleury as one of the Penguins' most valuable players. So, I mean, like you said, Joe, he's certainly still an elite goalie.
Yeah, and Bosma was saying yesterday, just in regards to that, someone asked him if kind of the whole Vokun thing was to push Fleury and is there a battle for number one keeper or whatever, and he was pretty much, no, Fleury's our guy. He knows he had a bad series last year against Philadelphia, but he also pinpointed many other areas where they didn't do exactly very well to give him the support that he needed to get back on track, and it was pretty much a shared blame kind of thing.
Yeah, this, but don't be mistaken, though. The Tomas Vokoun's presence is not entirely – well, I guess the element of competition – shouldn't probably be underrated with Tomas Vokoun, because that is part of why he's here. Sure, it's to keep him fresh, but having someone nipping at your toes is way more of a motivator than it is if you know that day in, day out, the team needs you to play in order to win. If they have some other guy that can come in and win, if you don't do the job, you bet your ass you're going to be under A game.
Yeah, I mean, it does a lot for the confidence for the coach right now. I mean, to go in night in and night out, especially in a schedule like this where you're going to have to rely on both goalies heavily. I mean, he's looking at around 19 games for Vokoun in this season already. I mean, it's a short season. To get 19 games would be huge. So to be able to rely on a backup goalie like that is awesome.
I mean, even if the Penguins just had one of the two, I still don't think you can name me 10 better goalies in the NHL than Tomas Vokoun. I think he's good enough to be a starter on a Stanley Cup contending team. And I already think Fleury is elite, so the fact that you've got both of these guys, you're going to have a top-flight goalie in net no matter what the schedule is like, no matter how many times you go back-to-back against anyone, you're going to have a shot to win, and that's what makes this Pittsburgh team different in the past. The back-checking is better, and the goaltending is better. Sure, the defense is a mess. There's no question about that. Maybe even more so than last year since Seth McWahalik isn't here. But at the same time, the puck-stopping ability between the pipes and on the backcheck is going to be so much better, and I do think that makes a big difference because, as we all know, sometimes a hot goalie can bail out a bad defense on a regular basis.
Yeah, maybe that's why the Flyers were rumored to go for Luongo. Maybe they've got Penn's goaltending envy. You got two solid shots.
They've had everybody goalie envy for a while.
Defenseman envy, goalie envy.
Blue Jackets, and that's why they signed Bobrovsky.
The thing about the Luongo deal is that I think they almost have to make that move and keep Brizgalov at the same time, regardless of how much they have to invest in that position this season. I mean, they'll lose some cap hit with taking Pronger's cap off the books with the long-term IR. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of back-to-back nights in the schedule. They could end up out of 48 games having Michael Layton start 20 of them. With a defense that has Andre Mazaris coming off a substantial injury, right now, the way I look at this Philadelphia roster, I think they're a 6th or 7th seed in the East.
And they already have some issues salary-wise. And I mean, they're right up against the cap with or without Pronger. And so that's going to be interesting to look at. And you know, something else I'm kind of curious about is how they're going to do the prorated thing come trade deadline. Because are they going to prorate that based on a percentage of 82 versus 48? Or are they going to just make it, you know, like they would treat it as though it were an 82-game season? I don't know. There's a lot of math involved, and that's not my strong point. Maybe Andy Hughes can chime in on this for us because he's tough at that shit.
I had a calculator earlier, so not like I had a
confession of Andy Hughes.
So don't think I'm like a math genius or something.
I do that. I'm going to stick by your math whiz. Sportsmatic says, love the Gonchar article. Props, Stepto. The point about McCullough spot on, why trade him just to get Gonchar makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tanner D. TDT says he proposes the of Tancredi, Paul Martin, and 2013 first round draft pick for Keith Yandel. I love Keith Yandel. Wouldn't complain about that at all. I don't know that I want to give out.
I propose you put down the NHL 13.
Yep. Okay. So you've had some time to think about this now. What would be your dream team of broadcasters if you were given the keys and given the opportunity to start completely fresh with an NBC broadcast? Let's start with Andy.
Well, I'm keeping Doc Emmerich as the play-by-play guy. I just don't think there's anyone close to Doc Emmerich as far as play-by-play goes. But for the color guy, I like Darren Pang. Darren Pang is a good, very good on that. So are we just doing the play-by-play and the color? Or is that?
Well, I have a whole thing here, but if that's all you've thought about, then that's fine.
All right, yeah, I'll go with those two.
I can look longer. Nick?
Well, play-by-play, Doc Emmerich, hands down. I think, I mean, special consideration for Mike Lang in there, too, but maybe that's just being a little bit of a homer. But Doc Emmerich does a fantastic job night in and night out, and maybe just with the currentness of today, I think Brian Burke would be great as a color commentary guy somewhere. And he's got time on his hands right now, so maybe Brian Burke as a color guy.
I hate when someone steals my thunder. Damn it.
I do that to you all the time.
I know. I mean, great minds think alike, right?
Oh, my.
I was going to literally say, now that Brian Burke is out of the general manager job, he's one of my favorite outspoken personalities in the league. He should be a color commentator. So now I have to rethink that whole position. But I love that.
I got Ronick.
That's okay. I'll pass.
just like John Sharp.
I think the play-by-play, Emmerich is my favorite guy of all time, but everyone else has said him. So I'm going to go with my runner-up at that. And I was always growing up, I was always a big Gary Thorne fan. I think he's fantastic doing a play-by-play job. I grew up listening to him. As far as the color commentary, that's a really interesting. I might have to get back to you on that. I know we only got 90 seconds left, but I'm really kind of bummed out because like I did not expect anyone to say Brian Burke.
I couldn't pick one play-by-play guy. Doc Emmerich is certainly great, but I've always loved Gary Thorne growing up. You know, on ESPN National Hockey Night, Jim Hughes. Guy, but you know, he has that whole Hockey in Canada thing he's pretty busy with up there working for CBC. Another guy who works for CBC is Craig Simpson, but I think, him and Jim Houston have better chemistry together than any broadcast crew working today, right now. So, those are my top two right there. Now, in the studio, I've got Darren Pang, who would also work in between the benches, Greg Wyshynski from Yahoo Puck Daddy, and he might be a little bit busy as well right now, but hopefully we can get him off the ice and into the broadcast booth because PK Subban actually does a really nice job on camera.
Theo Fleury. That's
anyway, I'm saying Theo Fleury. You know, I Man, I kind of camera doing that work. Hey, guys, make sure you download our podcast, and we will see you later. Yeah, PK Subban was actually really surprising all throughout the lockout and through some of this time. You know, he's a free agent. He was a restricted free agent, but he's done a really nice job on camera. Then Greg Wyshynski, if you download One Hockey Podcast, right now, the Jeff Merrick versus Greg Wyshynski show is fantastic, and the two of them play off each other real well. And Wyshynski would be great for the American audiences because he has that background from the Jersey area, and he's just a good personality, much better than what you have right now, because you have so many people like Jeremy Roenick, Mike Milbury, and all those guys who are just trying to really force things so much, and it would be a lot more natural with someone who's just actually legitimately a funny person, has a good sense of humor.
Well, I mean, I think the NHL, in terms of media, it's been an old boys club for some time. Mm-hmm. You take a look around at who most of the color commentators are in each NHL market, and they're guys that have been out of the league for a long time. I don't have a problem with a former player being in there. I think it's probably a good thing, to be honest. But I also think you have to get someone who understands the way the league is operating and the way everything is working now. I think that that's what the NHL tried to do with the disciplinary aspect when they brought in Brendan Shanahan. I'll leave my thoughts on that out of it because it's irrelevant to the current point. But when it comes to a color commentator, I think bringing in someone a little bit more current than Eddie Olczyk or Jeremy Roenick or a personality like that, who I just, to me, that stuff just does not fit, especially the Milbury-Roenick thing. It just comes across as convoluted and unprofessional and just not really that funny. If you don't grow up with that type of personality in your household, I think it's really off-putting to kind of have that. So, I mean, PK Subban, if you could find a guy that was like that, because you're right, he was really, really good. So someone like that, yeah, the NHL needs a personality like that.
Chris Pronger is like that kind of guy too, although might not be the best on it right now for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Pronger's pretty funny. He had some pretty funny remarks when the Flyers and Blackhawks were playing in the final. I remember, he's a pretty solid interview in that series.
Sean Avery.
Could be too weird.
Yeah,
it'd be weird. He could get on there and start talking about fashion or something.
I like the way he tucks his jersey.
I'm about that one.
It honestly could work though. I think Sean Avery is kind of a fun way. It's kind of a somebody you wouldn't necessarily think of right off the bat, but he certainly does. Is his own person. And he's not going to stop doing that just because he's on TV or on camera. I think that's the thing Mike Milbury and Pierre McGuire do. They change who they are, or at least they become some kind of freak over time because they've been on camera so much. But, Sean Avery, that's kind of cool. And maybe we'd have some real stories coming from fashion magazines instead of what we got from Cosmopolitan.
maybe Tim Thomas. Tim Thomas is a pretty outspoken guy.
Yeah.
If he wants to clarify himself and sort of restore his reputation around NHL fans, I think that would be a solid guy to have.
I'm adding Tim Thomas. I'm actually writing this down because I'm going to get a phone call and they're going to ask me my opinion.
Well, I mean, you decide that sort of thing. That's what I heard.
I'm campaigning for it, you know, which is why talking so much about how NHL Network has missed their opportunity and how we're talking about this and talked a little bit about Root Sports. This is I'm putting this on my resume. I'm tweeting it too. And, of course, we've had lots of people suggest Mike Lang. I love Mike Lang. I don't know that he's necessarily the guy for national podcasts. But there's no one person I'd rather listen to call a Pittsburgh Penguins hockey game.
I feel like with Lang, it's the same thing as Rick Jenneret in Buffalo. They're very iconic, and they're very good at what they do, but I feel like that they're so iconic that it only works at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Permanius. Agreed.
Disagree. The world needs Permanius brothers.
I agree. I'm just sticking up for Ken.
Does anybody else agree, though, that the one thing about Permanius brothers, it can work for sure, and I'd love to be able to go anywhere and be able to have a Permanius brothers sandwich, but isn't it weird to you to think about seeing other cities kind of represent their swag or show their colors or try to make it their, you know, TGI Fridays?
No, because it's always going to be known as a Pittsburgh thing, even when it becomes national.
You can't change that.
So, open a Brothers Baltimore and have Baltimore Ravens Way signs, you know, all over the place. You know, purple towels, Ray Lewis things. That's not going to seem weird, or that's not going to bother you in any way?
Hell no, man. I'll eat those crab cakes and put some Steelers logos up on them.
You know, I mean, you put it that way, and there's like one or two cities that maybe should be excluded from the Permanis franchising.
Yeah.
Columbus and Baltimore.
Why? Columbus would be the first place to get one. There's like a ton of Steelers fans here. There's almost more Steelers fans than any other market here.
If they keep it a Pittsburgh-themed restaurant in Columbus, I'm all for it. But the minute they start putting Ohio State crap up, come on.
I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry. Pitt and Penn State are better. We all know they represent the city so well.
I vote Athens should be the first.
Athens?
At least from a marketing standpoint and a clientele strategy, you know, Athens is perfect. They'd eat it up. And they would in Columbus, too.
Yeah.
I'd love to see them start in Columbus with a franchise and then spread on the way down and then have Columbus be one of the other places that pops into it.
It should be mentioned, actually, that, and this is, on a national basis, I don't know how this would affect Permanis Brothers, but Columbus is the number one test market in the continental United States for chain restaurant expansion.
Mm.
They were one of
like
the first to close all their Domino's and open the Baja Breeze up.
No, we had Baja Fresh here for a little while. That stuff was delicious, man. They got rid of it.
Right. Was that? There was one over by like Olentangy River Road. That was the first one I knew about.
Yeah, it's shut down. It's a Chipotle now.
Oh, that's new.
Yeah, no, well, Chipotle is a Columbus thing. They're everywhere around here.
Yeah, it's like there are more Chipotles than Taco Bells. Maybe more Chipotles than McDonald's at this point. But they're also McDonald's in Columbus, which is awesome.
Columbus is like Pittsburgh. It's a good city if you like to spend money in restaurants and gain a lot of weight. Hey, I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying.
If you're into that sort of thing.
Hey, if you're into gaining, if you're into getting fat and being broke, you should move to Columbus, Ohio.
A new skit here. We're going to create the Columbus Tourism Bureau. Which is perfect. We play the Columbus Blue Jackets in the season. It ain't happening this year.
No, it is not.
One thing they won't be getting is an NBA team. At least not the Kings.
Yeah, well, Sonics are back.
That's Joe's actually an NBA thing.
Yeah, for major sports in this country, it's definitely on the low rung of it, but I enjoy it, yeah. Grew up a Celtics fan.
It's nothing to do with basketball. I like basketball. I just don't like the NBA.
It is what it is.
I think that's a testament to the National Hockey League. I'm biased, whatever. I think that the National Hockey League is the best specimen of hockey on the planet. I think that the NBA is not. I think that the NCAA basketball far outweighs NBA basketball, and that is the premier, at least from an entertainment value. NCAA basketball is more entertaining than the NBA. I also have to say that college football is the same way. I
did
way more invested
with you on both.
I think
the NBA and I think basketball is a more individual driven sport. So if you enjoy big personalities like Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony and players like that, then you're probably going to be drawn more towards basketball. The appeal of hockey, especially in the NHL, is that a group of no-name guys, if their forecheck is good and they're playing strong defensive systems and the goaltending is good, the most no-name team can beat the best team because it's such a team-driven game. That's the appeal of the NHL, and that's the appeal of hockey that really not many sports can touch. So I just think it comes down to your personality, not necessarily the quality of the game.
I agree with that as well. Did everybody else get hit by a tranquilizer?
They might, man.
Just give me now, Joe.
Yeah, I guess it's just us. So how was your day today?
Oh, it was good.
We're gonna make
spend a lot of the day. Giving that article together
That's pretty solid. I read it. I enjoyed it. You can read it at thepenfnation.com. I think everybody at this point has probably clicked off of the show. Our connection is really bad. We're kind of having a little bit of technical issues as we close out this thing, which is why the show is pretty boring right now. Do you want to make some kind of like controversial? NHL comment?
Did you say me? Or Andy?
Anybody.
I could make comments, but they're not necessarily...
you can say that you think that... You could be like Jay Feaster and say they guarantee that the Flames are going to make the playoffs and then miss the playoffs.
Oh, man. I don't know about that. He makes guarantees. Jesus. We got all four of us.